The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, December 30th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day. Any minute now is going to be 2026. We need to have some idea on where we are going as a country. We need behemoths who are aggressive. We need behemoths who are willing to be participants in developing this country. We need behemoths who have a vision of a different type of Bahamas, a Bahamas that is 21st century, a Bahamas that is bustling, a Bahamas that behemoths can thrive, where behemoths can live a quality of life that can be envied by the world. We need a Bahamas where behemoths are partners with investors, foreign investors. We need a Bahamas where behemoths are engaged with the political directorate, the social directorate, and saying that this is how I see the Bahamas, this is what I want for the Bahamas, and we want you to partner with us so we all can benefit. We need a new Bahamas. We can't continue to move like how we are moving. Today, I happen to have a friend with me who's going to be my guest for today. Who is a type of social analyst. He has lived a life of an expat abroad. You hear me? This is a black expat, right? I'm going to have a series of behemoths living that expat life abroad. I'm hoping to have one again tomorrow. But this particular expat is a professional in tourism, right? When I say expat, he's a behemoth expat who lived in a foreign country. So I'm gonna make sure people, the listening audience, understand what I'm saying. He's back home now. He's back home in the Bahamas. Already invested abroad, coming back home to invest his wife, his children here, right? And I wanted to appreciate his experience, how he sees the Bahamas. I wanted to appreciate what things that he would recommend that we should be doing. I'm gonna have him come on every so often, right? Because his insight, I find engaging. His insight, I find that more behemoths need to hear his voice. And I said, man, come on, and we'll shoot the breeze as we do a series of interviews. But I have in studio, and I can have him formally introduce himself in terms of how he got to this foreign place to work and how he and his journey to come back home. Right? So I can have him do a narrative of who he is, right? Who he people him is. And then we can start our conversation about the new Bahamas, what we should be doing, what our government should be doing, how we should be engaging our government, how we should be engaging foreign investors, how we should be engaging each other. Without further ado, I introduce to you my friend, hey, Donato Misik. How are you? He's one of the Misiks from Turks Island, I think. How are you doing, Misik? How are you doing?
Good morning, Bahamas, and good morning, Cecil.
Come a little closer to the mic.
Yeah, good morning, Bahamas, and good morning, Cecil.
So I said I could start off with your narrative, man. Now, who you is? Because I know you from high school. I mean, it's a couple of years my junior.
Yeah. Yes,
right?
Yes,
but I want to know your narrative of, just because I introduced you as an expat, a behemoth expat living abroad, all right? I want people to appreciate you that you're one of us.
Yeah. Born in Grand Bahama, Freeport, Grand Bahama, 1978, and mother and father separated, lived in Nassau for the majority of my life, went to St. Augustine's, went to E.P. Roberts, went to R.M. Bailey. Cecil and I also worked together at the one and only Ocean Club for a few years, about 5 or 6 years. And, you know, during my travels, I've been extremely lucky, extremely blessed. You know, in E.P. Roberts, I was a part of a choir, and that choir took us to the World Expo 1988, and we went to Australia, Brisbane and Sydney, Australia. And that was my first, you know, international travel beyond Miami. Mm-hmm. And the love of travel and the love of understanding cultures. You know, we got to live with a family for about 2 or 3 days, you know, part of like an exchange type situation.
That's the E.P. Roberts Choir.
This was E.P. Roberts Choir. And it was an amazing experience, you know, lifelong friends from that moment to now. But it sent me on a journey of understanding cultures. If I knew what an anthropologist was, I think I would have been an anthropologist. So I call myself a novice anthropologist, wanted to understand cultures, understand what makes societies work, why some societies are better, why some cultures are better. And it just is taking me on that journey. So as I got to traverse the world and traverse and was afforded the ability to work in other places and able to come back home, you know, Cecil and I have always texted back and forth about things I've saw and things, why we couldn't have nice stuff, why we can't be better at this. Is anybody else seeing this? How is this happening and can we duplicate this? You know, we're doing this better than other countries because all of it's not negative. Some of the things are very positive that we're doing. And that's one of the things I came back home and wanted to be a lot more positive because you're hearing that narrative all the time with the Bahamas was not a real place. Your people would often say that. And it kind of disturbed me because I saw everybody else moving here. I saw the Indians moving here. I saw the Chinese moving here. You know, I saw these very posh schools building on the western side of Nassau. And I asked myself, does everybody see that a lot of people are moving to our country? Obviously, they feel it's a real place. So why, what's happening that narrative, this negative narrative about my country is being spun? And I came home with boots on the ground, ready to go, but extremely positive because what I saw globally, and when I compared to my own, we're not far behind. And I want to stay in that positive mode because only positive energy can happen if we stay positive and we keep going on this trajectory that we're currently on.
You say we're not far behind. I know some COIs say, man, we far, far behind, but I'm going to get politics, right? Just for the listening audience to appreciate, you have spent some time, measure of time abroad. You call last country last, yeah. But you've been last. But some other countries that you spent some time studying or working, call those places. And if you can, give us like a brief comparison, but don't concentrate too much on that because I want to go to the last country eventually and then come back home again.
You know, spend some time in the UK, spend some time in Bermuda, and obviously America's because that's right next door. But, you know, you see the intentionality of their product. And that's one of the things I came back noticing that nothing was happenstance. Nothing was organically happening with their product. However they decided to go in their industries, whether it was tourism, whether it was, you know, engineering, whether it was oil and gas, it wasn't just happening. There was an intentionality. You know, some nations were picking champions and they were actively giving research and development to those national champions to make them global success stories. You know, I saw it, you know, the last country that I lived in Turks and Caicos, I saw it with the Como brand, where the Como brand was part of, you know, Singapore's national investment strategy. I can't remember the exact words for it. But this brand is a global champion now, which was a national champion of Singapore. And it was helped funded by the government, but now it's turned into a private entity global. And I saw that level of intentionality that I don't necessarily know was happening, if it was happening at home. And I wanted to bring that message that everyone else seems to be crafting their narrative. And I don't want to say everyone else, but some of the nations that I went to was crafting what they wanted the world to see, what they wanted their story to be. You know, I worked at the Ritz-Carlton. I was a manager at the Ritz-Carlton. And one of the things they instilled was...
Ritz-Carlton, Turks and Caicos?
Yes.
Go ahead, sorry.
You know, they instilled it was authentic storytelling. And they tell you why the authentic storytelling was so important, was to almost enchant the customer. And they wanted to hear positive stories about your journey, positive stories about your country, positive stories about the brand and what you're doing. And it puts the person almost into a spell of this luxury tourist experience that's happening. And when I saw that, I was like, whoa, what's my country's positive story that we're spinning? You know, I still say it's better in the Bahamas to this day. That was part of our narrative that was going out there.
That narrative stuck. If you ask a typical Bahamian, what is our national motto besides forward, upward, onward, together, in terms of tourism, they'll say it is better in the Bahamas. Yes. Jamaica says it's nice in Jamaica. Jamaica's nice.
Yeah.
Jamaica's nice, man. Mm-hmm. But in response, we say Jamaica might be nice, but it is better in the Bahamas. For some reason, that stuck.
Yeah.
That stuck. You mentioned being purposeful in terms of planning the Bahamas. I would challenge you and say, I don't think we are being purposeful. Everything here is organically grown. Our tourism happened by chance. Someone decided to come with British Airways or I forget. I try to remember that story about how the first tourists come to the Bahamas for medication or whatever it is. And our tourism product flourished after that. It wasn't something planned. We're saying that we come together and say, we plan to be the best tourism nation in the region and by the world by extension. It seems that if we grew with it, we say, well, we do tourism well. And now we have other people crafting our tourism. Who, first of all, I would say our tourism product is not owned by Bahamians. I would say that. And you may say something different. But living abroad, who crafts the tourism product when you go to the UK, when you go to Turks and Caicos, you know? When you go to Singapore, who crafts that narrative saying, this is what you're coming here to see?
I saw a mix of, in some nations, it was actively the government in partnership with private business. In some nations, it was solely government. In some nations, it was solely private. You know, to give you an example, in Turks and Caicos, the real estate companies, they're not doing it specifically from the real estate companies. They've formed, private entities, and those private entities manage and curate the tourist product. Now, mind you, it's done in a positive way. It's not done to hurt the country, but is it Turks and Caicos centric to what the islanders eat, feel, drink, and their specific culture? No, it isn't. It's going to be driven specifically to the dollars and cents of this private entity, what makes sense for them. And you can't fault them for that. That's what they're doing for their best interest. And so when we craft a model for our nation, is it specifically done for our benefit? And when I say our benefit, what's happening here in the country, the way we're going forward with our agenda, I don't know if it's happening. I'm open to understand and to learn more. Are we intentional about what we're doing, or is it still organic? I don't know. That question is still yet to be seen.
You mentioned the private companies in Turks and Caicos is crafting a narrative. I would say our narrative of the Bahamas in terms of the tourism product is foreign-based, foreign-owned, foreign investors-owned. The two major or three major hotels has a brand. They sell that brand. And when you see the Bahamas advertised in the backdrop, you see the picture of that big hotel, right? When you say, come to the Bahamas and have the cuisine, right? It's not the fish fry that is being promoted. It is the restaurants of these places. They call it signature restaurants now. Signature experiences now. We now have sites that can be found throughout the Bahamas, the Deep Blue Hole, the flamingos of Inagua, the caves of Eleuthera. They are now in one hotel, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to fly around the Bahamas. The swimming pigs.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to the Exuma no more, the swimming pigs.
They got the pigs elsewhere.
They have the pigs them at the hotel itself. How do we counter that? Or how do we partner with these big hotels who are doing in their best interest, right? To say, we, the government need to be purposeful, or the people is going to be purposeful in crafting a narrative of the Bahamas. I'm not sure if we have a national museum here. What do we sell in terms of this is the Bahamas and this is what we're selling?
I like to tell things in story form that'll give you, kind of an idea how it can be done. this May, my wife and I, we had our first vacation as a family. You know, it was able to afford a nice vacation, and we went to London together. And we went to the London Museum. I think the London Museum opens up at 9 a.m. And the line, we thought we were going to be on time. We got there at like 8:50, and we walk up. The line was wrapped around the building to get to the London Museum. And it houses a library on the inside also. And the amount of people from all walks of life, all nationalities, all over the globe that came to just experience the museum and the library. And I did not understand at that point in time, this is something that people actually come to see when they travel abroad, when they go to New York, when they go to Rome, when they go to France. They want to see the Louvre. There are many Bahamian pictures I've seen on social media of Bahamians at the Louvre in Dubai or in France. And I don't think we understand that that's a part of the tourist experience, maybe because that's not what most of us would want to do. But there is a large percentage of travelers that want to experience your museum, that want to see your library, that want to see your historical. I see the tours happening in Nassau.
Mm, a lot of tours, yeah.
I see the tours happening. And these things are extremely fascinating and interesting to that global tourist. You know, recently returning home, I took a tour of Fort Charlotte. You know, it was the first tour I think I've been in Fort Charlotte in my life. And I went to Xavier's. And so I used to walk up there several times. We should not have been walking up there, but I walked mm-hmm. there several times. And the tour was fascinating, you know, learning about the tunnel system underneath the fort, which I don't think 99% of Bahamians actually know about. And there are loads of tourists that go there to experience these things. And that's the intentionality of our tourist product, that understanding what everybody else is experiencing abroad. What is the customer looking to experience? That's so important. What is our customer looking to experience? And highlighting that. And here's the spin-off of that. If our customer likes our fried fish, but really doesn't like our stew fish, so do we highlight a fried fish festival? And do we highlight the chefs that prepare this fried fish festival? And so now we can craft and make our own local celebrity chefs that we put out there to the world? That's the intentionality of what's happening globally. And I don't know if we're doing that. And I know we have the capabilities within our ministries. I know we have well-traveled people within our ministries that are learned. I know this for a fact. I don't know if it's happening as yet. And I know it's possible. I definitely know it's possible.
You spent some time in the UK.
Yes.
I like old buildings. I get vexed when they build those old buildings here, especially without explaining the narrative of the building. You can bulldoze it afterwards, but at least tell me the history, right? Take some pictures. Say, we're going to bulldoze this in 2 weeks. Go take your pictures now because it's gone, right? There's a building on Blue Hill. Let me see the Blue Road. There's Blue Hill Road. It was two buildings. They look identical. They were some kind of lodge buildings and turned to a preschool and whatever it is in a hostel right next to Fleming Street Clinic. The last one is being bulldozed now, right? And these buildings is about 100 odd years. The architecture of it is different. And I'm sure they have a reason why they bulldoze it, because people's living there, right? And I'm sure they have a reason for bulldoze. But do they bulldoze old buildings in the UK like that?
No, man. Listen, the architecture, and I'm saying this of my experience, not to say, well, I got to experience these things. And no, I'm saying this because I'm asking, can we do this home too? Can we duplicate this? Because I'm seeing thousands of people just go to see buildings.
Buildings.
And I was like, wow.
Do we have buildings in New Providence, the Bahamas, by extension, that people might want to see?
I know people would definitely want to see the old prison library that's downtown.
Man, that's closed. I've been closed for months, maybe a year, 2 years now.
Since
COVID.
I did not know that. When I saw the air conditioner with the broken glass outside the window there, I kind of figured it must not be operational. But people would definitely want to see that, definitely want to know that history of that, you know, definitely want to walk up the stairs, take pictures of it. It's an amazing, it's a uniquely shaped building. You know, something that I just learned today, this morning, about the age of our parliament, the second oldest parliament in the hemisphere.
17 odd.
People would definitely want to see, want to know that history.
You know, I'm not sure if tourists can even go into our parliament. I don't know.
And the line that has stood outside the British parliament where people taking pictures. You know, I have a friend from Pakistan in the UK, and he took me to something called Lincoln's Inn. He's a lawyer up there. I had no idea what an inn is. Apparently, when you pass the bar in the UK, you kind of marry yourself to one of the inns, and Lincoln Inn is one of those inns. It has a restaurant, has a law library, and this is where one of those movies, not Lord of the Rings, what's the other movie called?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter was filmed inside the library, a 900-year-old building, Cecil. 900.
They still have the building?
Still have the building.
And they ain't bulldozed it?
No, they ain't bulldozed that, man. And I went to the restaurant on the side. I met his law partner. He took me, we walked through the London School of Economics. We walked over to the actual court that's in a, I thought it was a cathedral, but this is the London court. This is in central London. And I was in awe, and I'm like, there are tours in the courthouse of people taking tours to see the architecture, to understand how the court system works.
Who would want to see a courthouse, though?
That's what I'm saying, Cecil. Do we know that there are people, millions of people, that want to see that? I didn't know that. I had to learn that through my travels. And so when I get, as soon as I see something, the Bahamas, I message Cecil right away. I'm like, Cecil, look at this. Why can't we have nice stuff like this? Why can't we do this? Do we even know? And I can say, honestly, I don't call myself super well-traveled, but I think, you know, I've got a few stamps in my passport that I don't know if everybody knows that people come to see this type of stuff. I don't know.
I look at Bay Street, right, which is the premier street of New Providence, the premier street of the Bahamas. This is the main street of the Bahamas. And I would wonder if there should be a manager of Bay Street.
A mayor.
A mayor of Bay Street, or mayor of Nassau, which will extend a little part of Bay Street. Is there a need for it, for us to capitalize on opportunities?
I think it's a fantastic idea, and here's why. There's an old theory I read in a book some years ago about the broken glass theory, about when people see broken windows and it turns into one window, and then the building turns into 10 windows because everybody just throws rocks through it, and it has a psychological effect of nobody cares, so I can do whatever. I can just pee wherever, and everything just turns to run down, and then crime infests those areas. You know, sometimes I think what happens to our country that we just kind of look at it, that's the way it's always been. And that's the way it's going to be. And so change becomes hard work. You know, it's not going to, you know, it's not, you can't just paint over that one little scar. We're going to have to do a full overhaul. And maybe the bureaucracy of that, to make that happen, maybe too large for a minister. You know, maybe it's too large. Maybe they have bigger issues that they need.
They're busy. The minister's busy.
And the operations of that downtown area from stretches from downtown, maybe a little bit west of Fish Fry, all the way to Harbor Bay, you know, that entire area, which when I'm driving in the evening times, as the sun goes down, I'm seeing loads of tourists traverse that area with families. And how are we paying attention? And because I just came home recently, my eyes might be a little bit different. That when I would be driving on the Eastern Road, you know, some years ago, I don't think I would have been paying attention to that. How many homeless, how many mentally challenged vagrants are out on the sides of the road with people with their families? Do we want that to be our narrative? Are we intentionally looking at, do we want to keep this area pristine for our tourist product? I mean, that is our economic machine. Like, we can't run away from that right now. That is our economic machine. So are we going to guard that? Are we going to curate that? Are we going to make this into something that we should be proud of to be number one? Really and truly believe that it's better in the Bahamas. Not better in the Bahamas for the PLP or the FNM. Better in the Bahamas for Bahamians. Do we truly believe that? And I think we truly believe that. Now it's time to do the work.
I love the term to be number one. I mean, I want the Bahamas to be number one.
Yeah.
Especially, definitely number one in the Caribbean and the region. And then perhaps number one in this whole northern hemisphere as a small little country. I expect us to win, right? And then there are times I say, man, I don't think we have the skill or the talent here. But we have professionals all around the world who has the skill and the talent. And we can import skill and talent if it's need be. Does Bay Street need a master plan? And you sent me something some weeks ago where the mayor of this particular area, they dictate what is invested to develop this particular area, right? And I said, I wonder if that could happen for Bay Street, where whoever's in charge of that, the city of Bay Street, right, could say, if you don't build this, right, if you don't correct this, we will fine you. Or you cannot come, any shop selling anything can be in this designated spot. It has to be curated. And you used the word curated before a couple times, right? Is that possible? Is that something we should be doing to be purposeful? Or like what happened, seems to be happening now, we waiting for the owners of Bay Street, the various businesses of Bay Street, to say, man, I'll build this.
You know, Cecil, and I'm involved in the construction sector. And one of the things that you want to get fired off a construction site, when the boss walks out there and he says, we need to get this over there. If you sit there and you give 10 different reasons for why it can't happen, then you're no use. And I think a lot of times what we're doing now is coming up with reasons for why it can't happen. You know, this one owned this and you can't do this and you legally. No, that's what we need to get done. When you pass East Street, you know, downtown takes a downward trend. And if we are going to be number one, you know, the former president of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew, you know, he said something about, I read where he said something about the port industry and Air Singapore, that if we're not going after this to be number one, then it doesn't even make sense.
Mm.
You know, and so when I spoke about being positive as a nation, as a team, when you're playing basketball, you don't huddle up and say, you know, Cecil, you got 3 turnovers, you know, but let's go out and win. You know, you remain positive in the moment. You say, Cecil, I know you can make that next shot.
Mm.
You know, so remaining positive and saying we can get it done. Our goal is to be number one, and this is why we're going to be number one. That narrative that's the start of the intentionality of the narrative.
There's a saying that you got to speak life.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of negativity. I see we get a call here. We can have the caller engage you too. There's a lot of negativity that seems to be permeating throughout the whole Bahamas. We just negative saying this ain't gonna happen. Is it important to be positive in terms of having direction of moving forward?
I'll give you an example. About 2 weeks ago, same friend of mine from Pakistan. He's actually currently in Pakistan. Met him in the UK. He sent me a message, you know, and this was the morning I woke up, jumped in the car that morning to go to work and listening to the radio that morning. I think we had a suicide. We had a stabbing. We had a sexual assault. We had a couple of murders. Then the news went to some negative news about Trump. Then it went to some negative news about Venezuela. Then the sports report was nice and positive. And then it went back to some negative news. And that same morning, he messaged me about a young lady named Gabrielle Turnquest. And she broke the record, a 600-year record of passing the bar at the age of 18. A Bahamian lady.
A Bahamian did that?
A Bahamian. Her name is Gabrielle Turnquest.
We didn't herald that?
a gentleman from Pakistan sent it to me, Cecil, in Pakistan. But the news told me about the suicide. It told me about the sexual assault. But nobody heard about Gabriel Turnquist.
I need to Google Gabriel Turnquist. Let's go to this caller right now. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM.
Yeah, good morning to you, and good morning to you again.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I find this conversation very interesting, you know, and your guest mentioned something that was very important just now when he spoke about working on a construction site and the boss asks you to do something and you come up with 10 different reasons as to why it can't work. They're the type of people that we have running our country. The people who believe that every time you come up with a great idea, I guess because it isn't their idea, they say they give you 10 reasons why it cannot work. This is where we are in the Bahamas. And I don't know how our colonial masters did it, how the British did it, because one can conclude that they had structure. The country had structure. They had a plan. You know, everyone in government had to justify their existence. The civil servants was an overflow with people doing nothing. I mean, it's just complete chaos. But you referenced Singapore. These countries have a national development plan, you know. I'm hearing that we have one, but where can I find it? Do you know where it is?
I know you're trying to beat me. I'm not going down that road, but I understand what you're trying to say. But
no,
go ahead.
I'm not going down no road. I'm just trying to find out where can I find the plan. Mm-hmm. You know, the 15-year, 20-year, 30-year plan. Where can I find it? My point is, we have successive leaders who have been governing the country from their head. If you want to build a 10-by-10 wall, 50 yards, you need to get a plan. But we don't need a plan to run the Bahamas. This is why we're in this quagmire that we find ourselves in. Anytime government changes, a new party comes in with their vision or their little small covenant or manifesto or whatever nonsense they want to call it. But it goes nowhere. This is just the Bahamas we're talking about here, next door to one of the greatest countries on planet Earth, the United States. And we can't get nothing right in the Bahamas. What's the deal with that? But these type of conversations, CA, they are very good. And I'm sure you put a lot of time and effort, as well as your guests that you bring on, to present something with structure, with sense to the Bahamian populace. But the sad reality is, though, and I just had this conversation dropping my brother to the airport, you know, and the sad reality is, when these political lies, when these rallies start with these politicians, you know, they introduce dancing and prancing and all the other stuff as part of, as prerequisite to getting elected, it seems. It seems, because every politician, every candidate now has their own song and they are dancing. But when it comes to political live debate, this is where it counts. They are running from it as far as the east is from the west. No party wants to introduce community live debate where all candidates who are vying for a particular area discuss the socioeconomic issues relative to that area. We don't have that in the Bahamas. We have nonsense in the Bahamas. I asked him, you know, because he's a professor, at the university. I said, when government drafting bills and policy, do they send them to UB to be vetted and critiqued? He said, no, they don't. So what do we expect to happen, CA and your guests, if we are running a country like the way we are running it?
Yeah.
Do you expect anything good to happen?
We need to now put our shoulders to the wheel and be committed now to pushing forward.
You have the mic in your hand, need to push for political live debate.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all could do this, because all of these things are going to get lost in the rubble over the next several weeks, months, leading up to the 2026 election, when these nonsense political rallies with people standing up, getting drunk, listening to them dance and talk nonsense. It's embarrassing for me. I don't know about you guys, but it's totally an embarrassment and a disrespect to my intelligence to be allowing these candidates to be vying for the highest elected office in the land, to be dancing and prancing and doing absolute nonsense. It's just sickening. veil you go in, you don't be embarrassed, CA? Or you like the fine fair, the rally?
I do be embarrassed, Clever. I do be embarrassed. We do have another caller there. Let me engage a caller. But I want to piggyback on what Clever Duncombe said, in terms of our education. Every year, we said, my God, we had a D level again. Right? Clearly, either we're not doing something right, or we're not focused, or we're not analyzing the results properly. Right? Because there's different educational systems. Right? Like some people said, perhaps we need to analyze what the Bahamas needs at this present time to move forward and have the education tailored towards that needs and not necessarily academic, right? Trade schools, specialty schools, service schools, because you went to a service institution at one point in time, yeah, right, to specialize, and you didn't go into no regular. I think you even paid for that by yourself, and you didn't go into no regular school. You gone all the way to UK, but we can talk about that right after this caller here. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM. You're live, caller.
Good morning to you. Good morning to your guests in the studio.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning there.
I just want to echo and endorse everything that the previous caller, Cleaver, had mentioned. You know, some of our minds have awoken here in this country, whereas we want a better country instead of the same old, same old. There were many recommendations put forward by the ordinary citizens, especially through the airwaves, about the many myriad of things that we believe that the Bahamas can improve upon. Our education system is one, specialty schools, as you mentioned, is the other. We talked about our airspace. We talked about a number of things here. You know, I am under the assumption that obviously this organized chaos, and I'm going to be very succinct here, because that's what's blatantly being displayed right now present. We normally talk about the Singapore model. We normally talk about the Australian model. We normally talk about many other successful countries. When are we going to begin to see the semblance of some of these things in real time, even though we know that it took time for many of these countries to mature to the point where they now see positive prosperity through the many policies and stuff that they have? But here in the Bahamas, it just seems as if everything is stagnant. We're here paying high taxes. We're borrowing loads of monies and yet seeing no true return on the ground. And, you know, the anger level in this country as it pertains to governance is very high. The frustration level is high. But, you know, like I normally say, and I'll close on this point, you know, we need to stop pointing the fingers at the politicians, because we see what the politicians are doing. We know the norm of what politicking is in this country, and yet we are the populace, the voting populace, knows what's going on, and we choose not to bring these people to account. We choose for them not to be transparent, and we keep on putting the same people in over and over and over again, mm-hmm, and getting the same results.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Who do we blame? We got to blame us. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course, Jeff. Let's go to this next caller before I go back to our guest. Our guest today is Donato Misik, who used to be an expat, living that expat life as a Bahamian, right? And we're doing a series on expat living and what they've seen abroad, and now they come back home, and what we should be doing. Go ahead, caller. You're live on Guiding Radio AM.
Yes, good afternoon. Well, good morning to you, Mr. Misik, and good morning to you, Mr. Nui.
Good morning.
I'm the Bahamian expat living in the Bahamas.
Yes.
I live here, but I don't work here. One of the things that he said is intentionality, and I heard Jeff just call, and I know we love to use this concept of copy and paste, and that's the problem that we have, is that the Bahamas is a unique formula. And, you know, use an example, Nui. You guys have heard me say for almost two decades that the Bahamas is the most digitally prepared country in the world. And this is where we are now. It's not preparedness, it's not utilization. I think there was an article in 2021 or 2022 of December concerning authenticating what I've said. And so we're now moving now 2 days away from the second quarter of the 21st century. And, you know, my family and I discuss this every week now. And we have a transcendental change in the way the world governs. The thing that your guest is saying is absolutely necessary, but the problem we have is leadership. the lack of leadership, you know, a country develop at the pace of leadership. Would we have had is 20th century, we have had 19th century, no, 20th century leadership using 19th and 20th century concepts trying to govern a 21st century country. Just use an example. He talked about the tourism product. We have a unique opportunity in this point in time with the change of Web3, FinTech, and the things of that sort. And I can say intentionally, my wife and I have worked for 5 years. And many of the financial people in the Bahamas thought we were crazy until this guy, the orange hair guy, repeated the same things that we have been saying for 6 years. I think his name is Donald Trump. Now the very same people are saying, you know, see, Alan, that little thing you kept talking about a couple of years ago, you want to repeat it now? And I say, I can't. But the point is now, the access is now here for behemoths to own their economy. And just like you have the gentleman in your studio, and you listen to Mr. Fred Mitchell, that says 57,000 behemoths alone is in the United States. So that definitely means that we not lacking the behemoths with the capability and the competency to do it, but we need leadership that understand that leadership prepares the way, not take us or build or create jobs or anything of these things. It is done through legislation, policy, process, procedures, programs, and protocols. And so we have to begin, like Cleaver said, to demand leadership that goes beyond the rhetoric and the dancing and singing and the slogans and logos and whatever else, that understands that we need an ecosystem that for behemoths to flourish. And so just let me say, just use an example in the web space, in the fintech and property tech that my wife and I are in. You can find 1,000 people somewhere in the world to invest $1,000 in you so you can have that $1 million bed and breakfast, or even 100 people at 10,000. But we just need the environment to allow access to this global capital to be utilized in the Bahamas.
Just need the environment.
These are the conversations that we have to have.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Alan Johnson. Just like, hey, Mr. We just need the environment.
Yep.
So
yep.
We need to now create the environment where behemoths would benefit more. We need to create an environment where investors can partner with behemoths. We need to create an environment where the government can partner with behemoths here to say, hey, I see where you are. We're going to invest money in you that you can take it to the next level.
Positive ground.
Right?
Positive
Even ground. In terms of getting access to property and land and whatever it is. That's what we need. We are talking to Donato Misek, who I call an expat. He was an expat where he was before. He's back home now. And we're just shooting the breeze, talking about what we should be doing, especially for the new year, how we should be purposeful in terms of addressing the Bahamas issues and not taking things by chance. It can't be organic. Got to be purposefully done. We'll be right back.
Are you searching for something new? Something exciting? Your dream job in paradise? Well, look no further. Royal Beach Club Paradise Island is hiring. Join a dynamic group of passionate hospitality professionals, craft unforgettable moments, and thrive in a vibrant, welcoming atmosphere. Play your part in shaping the future of our team while growing your own career every day. Bring your energy, your passion, and your creativity to a workplace that's as dynamic and fun as you are. At Royal Beach Club Paradise Island, the opportunities don't just exist. They're limitless. So are you ready to find your perfect fit? Visit Royal Beach Club at paradiseisland.com/career today and step into a world of exciting possibilities.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Rona. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Grosvenor today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
You try to rest, roll with the best. for all your printing needs. There ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com. and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We do have a number of issues in the Bahamas. I acknowledge that, right? And because of the number of issues, there tends to be people who are overwhelmed, who say nothing works. In fact, they call us the Bahamas not even a real place. But even despite that, there are a proliferation of expats, Europeans, Americans, and from around the world who are running to the Bahamas because they say this is the best country. In contrast to all the countries they can go to, they believe that the Bahamas is the best country. In fact, they've invested in schools like the Windsor. They invested in a school like King's College. I'm not sure if people understand what type of school King's College is, right? It's globally recognized. They see that there was a need to have a school like the King's College in the Bahamas because the people are bringing their children here because this country is one of the best countries to be in at this present time. So now they're sowing the seeds and making what I call the thing is called like terraforming. They're preparing the environment for when the people come. You say when you build it, the people will come. So my thing is, how do I capitalize? How do we capitalize when we see other people coming and say, man, I know what you're all complaining about. You're all complaining about crime. This is one of the peacefulest country I've ever come across. I've met some expats who said they had to hire bodyguards when they live in Kenya and they live in Iraq. They expats now, right? American expats. But to live there, they had had armed guards. Come to the Bahamas, they barefoot, walking on the sand, walking downtown, and have none of that concerns. But we in the Bahamas complain and say, man, this place rough. And I'm saying, if they think this is paradise, and I live in paradise, I need to find out how I can get this milk and honey so I can enjoy it too. And it can't be from the constant negative talking. I need to now be committed to say, I get a piece of this pie, and I'm going to demand that my government help me get a piece of this pie. But let's talk about education. What we need to be doing. Because you've gone to school abroad. You've been to specialized school. And you could have done some of these things here. But you went abroad to the UK and studied to be an expert in particular areas, right? What are we doing wrong, or what do we need to be doing?
See, so that's such a loaded question of where we need to go with education. I'm going to say something that I think might ruffle a few feathers, especially in the public school system. This might sound a little Trumpish, but I think you got to remove the bad apples that are in school that are not there to learn. You know, I went to government schools, some people call it public school, at E.P. Roberts and at R.M. Bailey. E.P. Roberts was a stellar primary school. It literally took me around the world, taking me to Australia, you know. And at the time, I don't know if it's the same way it is now, they had groups, group 1, 2, 3, and 4. And group 1 was the, you know, a little bit smarter kids. Group 2 was a little bit behind. Group 3 and 4. Group 4 kids were almost at a special ed level. But when you translate those kids and take them to high school, those group 4, sometimes group 3 kids are already left behind. And those are kids that are challenged at home. You know, their home environment is usually not correct. And they materialize into being violent in the schools. And in order to make a real wholesome environment for education and to plant a positive seed where the negativity cannot fester in or will have a tough time festering, you have to separate that negative environment in schools. And there's lots of that in the public schools. Whereas my friends, you know, I went to SAC for 3 years, left, moved to the States, and my family was in transition with moving back to the States. So I went to R.M. Bailey for a year, and it was night and day from St. Augustine's College to R.M. Bailey, living in the exact same country, night and day, where the problems people had at home, the type of violence that was in the school, but there were kids in R.M. Bailey who are stellar examples of a Bahamian citizen in business and in whatever they do. But the numbers are really small. Whereas I have a lot of friends that went to R.M. Bailey that are not here with us anymore, that took a different road in life for whatever reasons. But I think you got to remove those kids from the kids that actually want to learn. I don't have the solutions for it. Like, what do you do with them? But you need to have a positive environment for kids to learn, for kids to soar, so that they can have really true access for what's going on in the country and have a very clear conscience in mind of where they want to go, not worry about what gang they're affiliated with or who they're going to walk by or is this person. I think that just kills it at the education at the public school level. The private school seems to be doing awesome. I don't think there's much issue at the private school level. I think in that public school level is where work needs to happen in the country.
We need to create fertile ground in order to have big trees grow, right? That's Donato Misek. We're going to invite him back to shoot the breeze and to talk about the possibilities of the Bahamas, what we should be doing, how we should be working, how we should be pressuring our government, how we should be partnering our government, how we should be asking investors to say, if you're here, you need to invest in us, right? We need to have a better Bahamas for Bahamians, yeah. Right?
I want to thank you so much, Cecil Nuri. And like you said, we have to put pressure on them. I thank Cecil for creating the narrative of different ideas and concepts that we need to get together as a citizenry to push forward to the government. And like I said, again, we have to push forward what we want. They work for us. Civil servants work for us.
Good. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.